Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And unfortunately, Holly could not make it today. Family obligation. Between family obligations and not being able to see what we were talking about today just made it difficult.
Curse you, family, and not seeing.
Yes. Curse you not being on Netflix where you can watch it for free.
I know.
Yeah, I rented this Amazon, I think.
I do think this was on Netflix, but maybe like a couple months back. So
it wasn't on Netflix yesterday when I watched it because I looked.
Oh, was it?
It was not.
Oh, I don't. Oh, no. I meant. Never mind. It was on like some time back.
Oh yeah, sure. But I'm just saying it wasn't the one yesterday. And what that is Interstellar, since we are just 1 week away from, you know, like 14 straight episodes of Discovery. We figured we'd have a palate cleanser before getting straight into a whole bunch of Discovery just to talk about some non-Star Trek, because it'll be a while. It'll be months before we can do some non-Star Trek again.
It'd be like going on a long trip through a wormhole. Maybe there will be. By the time I come back, I could be your age.
I could be your age, Aaron. You're going to get younger than me? That'd be weird.
Go backwards in time. So just before we get into the main topic, there's two pretty big things came out over the weekend.
Beginning of the week.
Big news. Big news in Hollywood. The first one, unfortunately, sadly enough, is that it looks like Star Trek IV is just not going to happen.
Yeah, the director, who's the lady who's going to direct it, which is going to be a Star Trek first, having a woman director, she has been signed this. Was it the Game of Thrones prequel show?
Yeah, they're prequel shows. Yeah,
yeah. So she's jumped ship to that. So apparently, Star Trek IV is no more. But John Cho, good old Sulu himself, is confident it'll still happen one day.
Yeah, it still could. It just probably pushed off for another couple of years because they probably have to go into redevelopment.
Got to wait for Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth's careers to take a nosedive, and then they're like, okay, we'll take it. We'll take you at the reduced pay.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen for either of them. They're both on a pretty, you know, upward trajectory.
They're on the upswing.
Hemsworth, besides just doing Thor movies,
sex scandal away from being thrust back to the bottom.
You know, when you're that good looking for either of them, unless it's, you know, has minors involved, I mean, it's usually sex scandals just wash over them. People think like, oh, why couldn't that be me having sex with Chris Hemsworth or Chris Pine?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I really hope none of them have that allegations or anything like that put against them, because that would be horrible. And I want my Trek actors to be good, reputable people, but...
Sure.
It's just like, you know, that's one thing that could maybe pull them down and maybe get them to take a lesser paycheck.
Took it down a peg, huh, Pine? Now you're willing to do that Star Trek 4, huh? The real issue, I think, with the Star Trek 4 is that they didn't have as much money up front to pay them, so they were going to try to pay them on the back end after they got paid through their movie distribution throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And, they just both said no. So, you know, it's how it goes. Unfortunately, those are two pretty big actors. I mean, let's face it, when 2009 rolled around, you know, they were kind of nobodies. So
kind of, yeah,
they kind of, you know, made a name for themselves in the last, you know, 11-ish years. So,
it's sad that they couldn't compromise somewhere. Cause I mean, like the Star Trek kind of made them big. Sort of.
Well, the Thor movies made Hemsworth big. But, Pine. But, yeah. But
But yeah, so it seems like that's not going to go. And maybe they'll just do another Star Trek 4 and it won't involve Helmsworth. You know, that's a thought, too.
I mean, so. They could always just jump to next gen. I've always said I've wanted to see what next gen would look like in the Kelvin timeline. Like, what would the Enterprise D look like? Like, you know, 100 years in the future. What would
Picard have hair?
Yeah, who knows? Would they have figured out the technology to give him hair? Who knows? I mean, I really do want to see, or they could jump ahead and do a Star Trek that we haven't seen, do Enterprise B Star Trek, Enterprise C Star Trek, Enterprise, it could do anything, like really, it just jump it ahead a couple years. Because, I mean, like, if the Kelvin universe just stays the movies, they should just, like, jump around the timeline. They don't have to stick with Kirk and Spock, although Kirk and Spock is usually what gets butts in seats, so it's probably riskier to not do C and B, but it'd be much more... You know, if recasting next gen, that could, you know, do a thing. And that wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing. You know, you got a cast, you got a Star Trek trilogy with the old actors for this, you know, 1 through 3 with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. Let's do a next gen trilogy in the JJ universe. That would be fun. I would be totally down for that. And that way they don't have to worry about, you know, high paying actors like Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth. They can just
cast whoever. You could use the cast too. You could maybe do a Sulu movie, or you could do
Captain Sulu. John Cho's totally on board. He wants to do more.
Yeah, or you could do a Scotty. That'd be kind of cool,
Captain Scotty. Just Scotty's. I want to see Scotty just going batshit crazy for like 3 hours. I want to see Simon Pegg, just like the Simon Pegg solo Scotty movie. I would watch this.
Yeah.
Especially if Simon Pegg writes it, since Simon Pegg, like, he did great with Beyond. Beyond was by far the best of the three. And he co-wrote that. So, I mean, like, let's get him to write the Scotty solo movie. I would so be there.
Yeah, so who knows? I mean, it's maybe not dead, but at the moment,
looks like we aren't. It's on the shelf for now.
But it looks like it's not going to move forward, at least for a good year, if not two. So,
yeah.
I don't see it, like, getting shaped up into a film anytime soon, because you just have to get everything reorganized.
And it's funny, like 6 months ago, there was like 2 scripts in development for Star Trek, IV, and Quentin Tarantino. What happened to that? We haven't heard anything from the Quentin Tarantino Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, I am kind of surprised we haven't heard that. Maybe that's still in development, and maybe that's like a little ace in their sleeve that they might bust out. But you know, we'll see what happens. The other one that came out was Alex Kurtzman was having an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, and he kind of, I don't know if not spilled the beans, but gave some information about this Picard series. The big thing is Picard, his quote here is, Picard's life was radically altered by the dissolution of the Romulan Empire. So this kind of cements what happened in the 2009 reboot, where they basically bring out that the Romulus's star goes supernova, destroying, you know, the homeworld, Romulan homeworld.
It's canon. It's what made the Star Trek 2009 thing. So it is canon to the regular universe.
Right.
And in this time, Captain Picard isn't a captain. Data's – so, like, if they do – like, it'll be really interesting to see what they do, because if they're following that timeline as closely as they seem to be, Picard is an ambassador.
Yes.
At this point in time, in that timeline. In the original,
It's 20 years in the future, so it's obviously if he's gone to become admiral, he's probably retired.
I just don't know if he's ambassador. I can't remember if he was ambassador to Vulcan or if he was ambassador to Romulus. I don't remember which one he was. It's been I haven't read them because this was the before Star Trek comic that came out, and it came out before 2009. So I haven't read them. In 10 years?
So yeah, no.
Fuzzy.
I do believe that it was Romulan, the Romulus that he was ambassador to, because I think there was a scene with him and Spock doing that. I guess Kurtzman co-wrote that comic that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going back to that well for Picard. So apparently what happened was, as Kurtzman brought out, that they had a meeting during time of the Oscars that Patrick Stewart was going to be there, and he agreed to meet, and he sat down and they gave him a pitch, and he said, I want a 3-page treatment, and basically saying, I don't want to go and do what we did before, but I also want to keep the spirit of the character alive, and I want to challenge people with this character. I don't want to go back to what we had before.
I really hope they watched Red Letter Media's treatment and they just steal that, because that would be the best possible outcome, because it's such a good treatment.
So, Kurtzman and a bunch of other writers, they all went and they sat down and they tried to write up a script. And instead of giving a 3-page treatment, apparently they gave him a 34-page treatment. and they re-met with him. And basically he was very happy. And when next time he got a call from his agent and said that he was on board. So,
well, I think
whatever they dreamt up, or he seemed to like.
Oh, that's good. And it looks like he's actually helping to actively develop the show himself too, so he can give his own perspective on Picard and whatnot for the show. So I'm really excited to see how that pans out. I really hope that they do it justice and that he does justice to his own character. Because he kind of took liberties in Nemesis because he was like, oh, I like the dune buggy ride. So that's why they had him dune buggy ride in Insurrection. Or not Insurrection, Nemesis. I'm like, really? Yeah. I'm like, that's kind of weird. That's nothing like the character of Jean-Luc Picard to want a dune buggy.
Yeah, so that's it's all interesting. My take is I think what he might be doing after Romulus a star goes supernova, they might have to help these displaced Romulans, and that might be a big story arc. Maybe reunification with the Vulcan people.
Yes, in the mold of Vulcan, or like
yeah.
What about the Remans, though? They're kind of ugly. They don't want to. I don't think Vulcans want the Remans living on their planet.
That's your ugly Reman cousins. Get them off my planet.
And Spock says there is no moon for Vulcan, so they can't just put the Remans on the moon. There is no moon.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
although I don't know what Delta Vega is, because Delta Vega was kind of there close enough to see Vulcan. Is it a sister planet? Who knows? I don't know.
I don't know either. It's all very interesting. It's cool stuff. I'm excited that obviously Picard in the next gen, he dealt with a lot of Romulan storylines.
Yeah.
So this is going to be cool to see the Romulans at basically the tail end of their empire.
God, I hope they retcon out the stupid permafrown, because in the 2009 movie they didn't have the stupid permafrown. So I hope, like with Kurtzman working on it, that hopefully they won't do the stupid permafrown thing. Because when we talked about this 2009 movie, one of my biggest positives is they didn't give the Romulans that damn permafrown. So hopefully, got my fingers crossed that we don't have that stupid forehead prosthetic on the Romulans if they do a Romulan story arc in the Picard series.
Well, maybe it was like all those centuries of them just being grumpy because they're on Romulus. And
the ugliest name responsible.
And now they'll have like surprise looks that their star exploded instead of the permafrown. They'll have it like, we'll go, oh shit face.
Perma surprise face. That'd be pretty funny. I'd still prefer them just to be regular, just have the ears.
Just be a regular Vulcan, guys. So yeah, that's I think that's encouraging. And there was also mentioned that we're going to get some new short treks, I guess, after Discovery, and these will be the animated.
Oh, they're going to do animated short treks?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. They're going to – go ahead.
Still, I don't know. I'm just not sold on the short trek idea. To me, the short treks felt like they're trying to prove to the fan film community that you can tell short Star Trek stories and they can be 15 minutes and they don't have to connect and they don't have to be a larger story. And I felt like that failed spectacularly. The Mud one was the most fun, but it, like I just explained last week, it was the most disappointing to me because I had all these expectations. But I mean, it just if I think about it, just look at them in as individual stories, that one was the most fun and to me the most Star Trek-y of them all. But I don't know, I just don't like the short Trek idea. It was kind of a pain to watch all four of them and to wait a month apart for like just drips and drabs of Star Trek, and they weren't even very good drips and drabs. So I mean, like, unless the quality. I mean, I don't mean quality as in the visuals, because I mean they all looked amazing. Quality as in the story is like, make them 30 minutes. Like, the 15 minute thing is just not long enough. And I felt like that 15 minute time limit they set him at was trying to prove about the fan films, and I feel like it failed spectacularly, at least in my mind.
Well, Michael McMahon, who's writing the Lower Decks, he wrote The Escape Artist. He wrote that script for that short trek.
Oh, the Rick and Morty guy? That would make sense. Yes. Why it's that episode's the most fun.
Yeah, so he's the one who's going to be doing the Lower Decks, and apparently there's going to be another animated series, but for kids. So
yeah, I saw Alex Kurtzman had an article where he was talking about how he didn't like Star Trek growing up because it never appealed to him as a kid because everyone's fully formed and there's no sense of adventure because everyone's already fully formed. And I mean, yeah, I guess that's an interesting take, but at the same time, I mean, like, it's Starfleet. That's
I don't think when you're 7 or 8 years old, you're worried about people fully formed. I think you're just looking for a good story. So, yeah. I think they can do that if they do it smart. It doesn't have to be like kid bullshit. It could be like my kids love the new Voltron on Netflix, and I can easily sit down and watch the new Voltron. It's not awful.
Painful to watch,
you know?
Yeah.
It's actually funny at certain parts, and there's some cool parts in there, some really cool sci-fi ideas floating around there. So that new Voltron, it goes, I think, 8 seasons or something like that. So it's pretty good. So if they go in that vein, I think you could keep the adults and then have the kiddies along for the ride as well. So that's a possibility.
Yeah, hopefully. And hopefully it'll be better than this original Star Trek animated series, which claimed to be aimed at kids, but they used way too big words for children. It was just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, we've done plenty of reviews of the animated series, and... Well, anyways, it's interesting to say the least.
That's pretty inscrutable, Mr. Sulu. What?
Should we get into Interstellar?
Absolutely.
Interstellar is a sci-fi film, in case you missed it. It was in 2014, starring Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway. Directed by the great Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
And Christopher Nolan, if you don't know, if you've been hiding under a rock, he did all the Batman the Dark Knight series, and he just recently did Dunkirk.
I was not impressed with Dunkirk.
Oh, all right.
What did you think of Dunkirk?
Okay, war movie. You know, it was well done. War movies are kind of like, I don't hate them, but sometimes they're just like, okay, whatever.
Like, nothing's lived up to Saving Private Ryan for me.
Well, that was a pretty stunning movie, period. What about Inception?
Inception was pretty good.
I loved Inception. I thought that was a really playful movie.
I thought Inception was great. And the thing is, like, I really wanted The Matrix to be deep like that. Like, Matrix 2 and 3, I really wanted The Matrix or The Matrix thing to be a thing. But the fact that they made it so dumb in the... In the show, or in the thing where there's only one Matrix deep, and I'm like, you've got all these sensor Matrix in the Matrix. They never explored it. They had 3 movies to explore how deep they could go. In Inception, they basically did a Matrix within a Matrix within a Matrix within a Matrix in one movie, and it made sense, and it was awesome. So I don't understand why in 3 movies they couldn't go more than one level deep. It just rubbed me the wrong way, and The Matrix could have been so much better if they would have gone deeper.
That might be a podcast for another time.
Yeah. We could talk about The Matrix trilogy.
We could. It would be kind of fun, actually. So just some basic information on Interstellar. Interstellar came out in America November 5th, 2014. It's almost 3 hour long movie.
It's pretty long.
So it's pretty damn long. Its budget was $165 million, and it brought in box office total is $677.5 million. So
that is an insane return.
It made its money back. Oh, by the way, just while we're talking about returns, I heard that Aquaman's absolutely killing it. So,
oh yeah,
I just heard it just recently that Aquaman's made something like $1 billion or something like that.
Really? This is without a doubt going to be an Aquaman 2. I was looking at Fan Expo today, and Jason Momoa is going to be at the Fan Expo. So, Kaylee and I were saying maybe me, the four of us, your wife, and then you can take the photo op with him, because he always does the fun photo ops with couples where he's like hugging the wife and like pushing the husband away. So we thought that'd be really funny.
Right. That might be fun. Oh, up in Toronto? Yeah.
Yeah, Fan Expo Toronto. It's August. So, cool. That'd be cool for the four of us to go up and do.
Yeah, that might be fun.
Yeah. You and your wife can go meet Aquaman.
Come on, dear. Let's go meet Aquaman. Okay, so the movie basically starts off that we're in the mid-21st century, and it looks like we're kind of doing like a Dust Bowl kind of Great Depression kind of life.
It looks where, like the 1950s.
Like 1930s, where we had the Kansas Dust Bowl and stuff like that, where people, the farms were all failing, and they just had these huge dust storms. So we have the main character, Cooper, and his wife apparently has passed away, and he's got his son, Tom, his daughter, Murphy, and his father-in-law, Grandpa Donald. So, it's a farm that they live on, and they're planting corn.
Because okra don't take no more.
Okra is dying. And that's the other thing that's happening, is that a lot of the crops are dying. There's a blight going around with a lot of crops, and crops are completely failing. So, like, he's – I think it was John Lithgow's character, Donald, the grandfather, says he's burning his crops. It's okra. It's just – it's the last okra. And he goes, ever. Yeah, so
no more.
I never like okra. I never like okra, tell you the truth.
I only had it once, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
I just don't like the taste of it.
I mean, it's not great. Mm. I mean, I'm not going to like be sad when okra's gone, but I don't think I hate it.
I cheered at that point.
Yes. You could walk out of the movie theater. You were happy. One day okra will be gone. That's all I need to know.
10 minutes into the movie, I walk out. That's all I need
to know that okra's going to die one day.
Who cares about the black holes in this movie? All right, so
Anne Hathaway's black hole. Ooh, no.
Ooh. So
she gets stuck to raise 30 children by herself. Good on her.
Oh my god! So they basically live in this
dystopian future.
Yeah, it's everything's not going quite right. And
like they got rid of MRI machines, and so his wife died, and they don't believe that the NASA landed on the moon.
Right,
they regressed a lot.
We get a scene where they're driving. Cooper's driving his kids to school. It's, I guess, parent-teacher conference, and he has to take – they see a drone flying, and he chases the drone through these cornfields and – uses a computer to hack into it, and so, but he's taking it over because he wants to use the parts for like one of his combines. Mm-hmm. So we find out, obviously, he's a lot smarter. He's not just a regular farmer. He's like a super genius farmer.
He worked for NASA, and he learned how to fly and all this stuff, but he never got a chance to really do it. So he learned how to fly crop things in his farm.
Yeah, he learned to make combines. So these threads. It's strange because the movie starts off in such a
it's like very down to earth.
Yeah, it's like slow pace because they're on the farm and stuff like that. But there's these anomalies that keep happening. So his daughter Murphy has a bookshelf in a room, and the books are falling off. And one of them breaks one of his models of the Apollo missions, and she thinks it's a ghost. Cooper says, there's no such thing as ghosts. Why don't you take time and try to figure out what this anomaly is?
And think scientifically.
Exactly. So during this time, one of the combines all come to the house, like because there's something magnetic that's drawing them, drawing off their compasses or something like that. And he's like, I don't know what that could have done. So he's confused what's happening. And then during one of the dust storms, when they come back, Murphy leaves the window open, and he sees these lines are coming down in this weird order. And he realizes that the lines are actually coordinates.
Yeah, he figures out their binary coordinates.
Right. And they figure out, they look on the map where it is. They plot out where on the map, and Cooper's going to take a ride, and Murphy stoles away on his truck. And as they head off, they go for a long ride, and it ends up being NASA. It's a hidden NASA facility. So in this post-apocalyptic, but post-scarcity world, NASA has been kind of is not a thing that they want to announce.
It's basically underground. They don't like people have got rid of so much technology. There's no military anymore. It's just like they just want everyone to be farmers.
Right.
It's a strange world. I think it's Farmville, the movie.
Farmville.
The video game where everyone's a farmer.
Yeah, Green Acres is a place to be. when they get there, there's Professor Brand, played by...
Anne Hathaway.
John Brand, played by...
You said doctor. They're both doctors, so...
Oh, I said professor. Professor.
Oh, that's Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
This is, I love me some Michael
Caine.
This is
your time
to shine. I know. I totally blew that. I'll just cut out the part where I didn't realize you're talking. I can just go, Michael Caine.
Holly's not here.
The one time we actually have a Michael Caine movie, I don't do the Michael Caine thing, right?
Yeah, and Holly's not here for us to torture the Michael Caine impression. She hates it.
She hates it?
Oh, she said it the last time. I was like, I don't understand it. It's hilarious. I love her Michael Caine impression.
Yeah, that's great.
Anyways, Cooper's old boss or supervisor or whatever, Michael Caine is Professor Brand, and he is working on a theory on how to solve gravity and relativity and all this stuff to try to basically save the people of Earth.
I'm going to outsmart Einstein one day.
I'm going to outsmart
Einstein one day because I'm Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. What they find out is that there's been a gravitational anomaly out near Saturn. It's a wormhole, and this wormhole leads to another galaxy. There are some 12 potential habitable planets that are by this giant black hole named Gargantua, and they sent 12 astronauts into space, into the wormhole, to scout out these planets. And what they wanted them to do, and they want Cooper, because Cooper is one of their best pilots, I guess, is that they want him to take the mission out into space and see if any of those planets are habitable.
Gargantua, that sounds like the answer to one of your mama jokes.
Your mama, it's a Gargantua. So one of the things that they have is they call it population bombs, where they have 5,000 frozen human embryos that are
ready to go.
Ready to go. And
Michael Caine jizzed all over all of them. They're all going to be his.
Father, I'm Michael Caine.
I'm Michael Caine.
They're all little Michael Caines.
They're all clones of him, so they can solve the equation. They can't repopulate because they're all male. They're all Michael Caine.
That's the part of the movie they never tell you.
Because plan A wasn't going to work, and plan B's definitely not going to work when they're all Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
He just populates a planet with 1,000 of him so they can solve the problem. And then they have to figure out how to breed with only Michael Caines.
Michael Caine.
We have to make a My Womb Caine.
They're just milling about the planet, have no idea what to do.
They get really depressed.
Obviously, Michael Caine's character, Professor Brand, wants to recruit Cooper. Cooper's hesitant because he's got his kids and everything. It's basically a family back home. And he's like, look, Earth is dying. Corn's going to die soon. There's just the blight is going to take over all these, and soon all the food will be gone.
And your daughter will be the last generation to leave.
Yeah. And then they'll start to suffocate kind of, because there won't be enough oxygen on the planet Earth. So Cooper decides that he's going to, pilot for this mission. Unfortunately, he has to leave his children and his daughter, Murph, she is not happy with him.
She resents him for it.
Yeah, just before he leaves, he hands her a watch, and he tries to tell her about the differences in relativity with time. And he's like, basically, when I come back, you could be as old as I am. And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? So,
and she's like, you don't know when you're coming back. So she freaks out on him even more. And he doesn't tell her why he's going, because he doesn't want to make her scared the world's going to end. So he kind of makes it hard on himself by protecting her.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if he could told her a little bit of the truth, that might have made her feel a bit better. So
right.
She was kind of being a dick, but he also was like when you're too protective of your children, I think you can cause them harm.
Sure, but also, you know, she's a child.
So, yes.
So they don't always get it. So the crew consists of Professor Brand's daughter, which is Dr. Brand, Dr. Amelia Brand.
That's Catwoman there.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway.
Where's Christian Bale in this movie?
I don't know.
We've got most of the cast from The Dark Knight, but no Christian Bale.
Yeah, he decided to bail on it.
He bailed.
Dr. Romilly and Dr. Doyle. So a bunch of doctors and then just a good old coop. And two cool robots.
TARS. TARS is my favorite characters.
TARS and Case, two different robots that are on there. So
I like TARS.
He's my favorite. TARS is great. Yeah, he's pretty cool.
I think he's my favorite character in the whole movie.
He is pretty awesome. How he keeps on talking about his humor setting.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. So they dock up with this like a sister ship, which
it's
like is
a little
the
space station, so it can spin and have gravity.
Yeah. So this is the Endurance. They take off to Saturn. They go to sleep for a while.
2 years.
And yes. Yeah, so when they wake up, they're back at the at Saturn. They get to the wormhole. They enter the wormhole. The wormhole takes them successfully through to the next to the other galaxy.
And Anne Hathaway shakes hands with a ghost.
Hello, ghost. I'm Michael Caine.
She sounds nothing like Michael Caine.
So when they get there, there's basically three planets that they want to check out. And the first one is Miller's planet. It's the closest one to investigate. The biggest worry is time dilation with these planets, because they're so close to the Gargantua planet. It's basically every
hour is they spend there
seven years. So they go down to Miller. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So they go down to this Miller's planet. It's an ocean as far as they can see, and it's only about maybe knee to waist high when they land. And what they don't realize is that they're looking for the people that landed there and were sending transmissions. But unfortunately, they find the wreckage, and then they find that the mountains in the distance are not mountains. They are insanely tall tidal waves.
They are big-ass waves.
And the
Anne
ship
Hathaway gets stuck under something somehow for some reason.
Well, the other side of it is this: the gravity is very, very severe. So I'm sure she got trapped under some of the wreckage with the water, and she gets saved by TARS, the robot. And what happens is
the other guy didn't get on the ship for whatever reason. He just gets washed away.
Yeah, Dr. Doyle gets washed away at the last second, and they have to take off. Unfortunately, their engine gets flooded, and it delays things while their engines clear out. They get out at the last minute, just before another wave takes them, and by the time they get back, 23 years.
So they were down there for 3 hours?
And 20 years. And Dr. Romilly is there. And
he's all old. He's like, I didn't think you guys were coming back.
Yeah, he's like, I waited for years for you. He's all by himself.
He's like, why didn't you go to sleep? He's like, I just didn't want to sleep my life away. So,
that
sucks. I'm surprised. Like, it would have been kind of interesting if they like made him kind of go a little bit insane from being alone that long. Because I think you kind of would. Because, I mean, people in solitary in jails, they go kind of nuts. And they're not in solitary for 23 years.
I hope he seemed his character seemed a bit autistic, so maybe he was all right being without a lot of human interaction.
Yeah, maybe he's fine.
I'm fine. I'm okay. Little Michael Caine.
He just listened to that the birds chirping and the rain falling for 23 years that Coop gave him.
That's all he needed.
Like the 5-minute MP3, he just listened to that for 23 years. great.
Complete loop.
For sure.
So next they're going to check out the other planet. This is Eminence Planet. Might be, but then there's a Dr. Manns who was supposed to be like the greatest hero of all of these people.
They Buzz keep Lightyear talking to the rescue.
Yeah, he's kind of the Buzz Lightyear of or Zap Brannigan of there's like, he was the best of all of us, you know. So we and on Edmund's planet, Anne Hathaway's character had some kind of romantic relationship, and so she wants to go to that planet because she's like, you know, look, I love him. After all these, you know, light years, that has to mean something. And Cooper's like, honestly, I don't think it really does.
I don't think loving someone's enough to, like, pick their planet because we don't know. And the readings aren't good. What was it? Wasn't his also too close to Gargantua?
Yes. And also Dr. Mann's planet is definitely, he was signaling that he's found some a decent planet and to come and check it out.
Good.
Yeah, so
or is it?
So they go to Mann's planet. Dr. Mann's been asleep for a while. Oh, there's a real strong scene right after they get off the water planet, Miller's planet, where he retrieves all the messages for the 23 years.
Oh man, I cried a lot when I saw that in the movie theater at that scene.
Oh, it's so
good, like so sad. Matthew McConaughey did such a good job acting for that scene, like being going from like happy to like insanely sad, like in like just seconds. It was really, really powerful, and the music, it was really well done.
Yeah, no, it's great, and you know, his son has a baby, and then we find out the baby died, and then Murph sends him one message.
Whatever. And basically, it's my birthday, and we're the same age now. Fuck you for leaving me.
Yeah.
She's so still bitter.
She has still not gotten over it. So
the thing is, like, she should have. Like, when she was a kid, she didn't understand why. But like now, as an adult, I'm sure she's been told. Especially since he's working for Michael Caine, I figured he would have told her why he was going out there.
Yeah. So that's the other side of it, is that we find out that Murphy had been tutored now by Michael Caine's character, and they're working on trying to solve this gravity equation. And they keep on running against the wall for the equation because they need to actually see what happens inside a black hole with a singularity to understand that data. If they could figure that out, then they could make a space station and send everyone off the planet Earth and save humanity as we know it. So that's his plan. That's what we find out. So as they go down to Dr. Mann's planet, it's a frozen planet with, I guess, it has alkaline and ammonia atmosphere.
And the clouds are even frozen.
The clouds are frozen. In fact, they hit the cloud flying in and it kind of crumbles. And you're like, what the hell?
I guess they land on a cloud, too, because, I mean, they talk about like the surface being better.
Yeah, so when they wake Dr. Mann, Dr. Mann starts crying. He didn't think he'd ever see anybody again, and he
couldn't plant potatoes on this world, so he couldn't escape.
So
like the Martian,
yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. He's like, gotta use my own shit here.
He had no potatoes and shit to do it with. Never trust Matt Damon on another planet.
Never trust Matt Damon. So Matt Damon's character basically says, "On you know, right here for where we are now, I dropped some probes down. It looks like there's some good surface." And he even says that there might be sharing it with intelligent life or some kind of life down below. He didn't say what, but what we find out later is that Dr. Mann
he's
lying.
He's a big red liar.
About all this planet has nothing, that there's no surface of the planet. It just goes on like this forever. And there's basically he only made the planet seem great to be rescued. Because he just did not think he couldn't live his life being trapped there on the planet. He tries to kill Cooper by breaking his helmet, and at the last minute, Cooper gets his communicator back and calls Dr. Brand, Anne Hathaway's character, to save him. So they save him, but unfortunately, Mr. Waiting 20 years up in the Endurance, Dr. Romley,
patience never pays.
he is going to look at one of Dr. Mann's robots and try to get some information off of it. And unfortunately, it's booby-trapped, and it kills Dr. Romley. And so he died.
That was unfortunately really sad that he booby-trapped his robot.
Yeah, like, what a dick.
I love the TARDIS.
They're
such great friends.
They are. And Dr. Mann steals one of their ships, and Cooper with Dr. Brand and the robots both jump in one of Dr. Mann's ships, and Dr. Mann has a jump on him, and he tries to manually dock, and apparently he can't do it. They locked him out. And
TARDIS locked him out because TARDIS is smart.
Yeah, but unfortunately Dr. Mann's a freaking idiot, and he opens the airlock even though he's not successfully docked, and it, the pressurization of the airlock blows out the ship and shreds the Endurance, and the Endurance is spinning out of control, falling apart. Cooper comes, and he spins his ship, and they do this incredible docking maneuver, and they regain control of the Endurance. A pretty cool scene, and then they have to kind of like figure out what they're going to do from there. So they want now go to Anne Hathaway's boyfriend's planet, Emmons' planet, but they can only use that by doing a slingshot around the black hole Gargantua.
And they're going to sacrifice TARDIS to try to get him to send out data.
It's going to add 51 years time dilation by doing this. So when they do that, what we don't know, what isn't said that while they're doing this, not only is TARDIS going to sacrifice himself because they need to lighten the load, also Cooper is going to lighten the load, and he drops out.
And it's funny Anne Hathaway didn't know this because she's like the scientist. You think she would have crunched some of the numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well.
So we get this great scene as Cooper starts entering into the black hole, and all of a sudden things go black. He ejects out of a ship, and he starts flying into the black hole without a spaceship. And this is where it gets weird, because instead of being crushed to death, he finds himself in what they call a tesseract. And
it's a three-dimensional representation of four-dimensional space.
Right. So what he sees is the bookcases in Murphy's room, but he's seeing it from behind. And now he can see all throughout time everything that happens in Murph's room. And he can
Boys back when she's a teenager and all that stuff. Stuff a parent never wants to see.
Not him, Murph, not him.
No.
I hate that kid. So this is when we find out that Cooper is Murphy's ghost. And he's banging on the books, and we have these emotional things like he doesn't want himself to go, so he sends a message to stay. But then later he realizes what he has to do, that he is his ghost, so he sends them
he gets back in contact with TARDIS. And so TARDIS
survived as well. He's in the Tesseract as well somewhere.
So because TARDIS is alive, he's able to give him the key, because the key to solving the gravity is being able to witness the singularity inside of a black hole. And without being able to go into a black hole, they can't figure it out. But since they're both in the black hole, TARDIS will send them the information. So then Matthew McConaughey realizes that he's got to give them the coordinates so they can make everything happen that's happened. And then
so he has – The watch that he gave Murphy all those years back, he sets Morse code with the information that TARDIS collected from inside the Event Horizon, and that's how he gets the information to her. Back on Earth, she gets that watch, and she figures out that her father was the ghost, and that is Morse code, and she writes that down, and she realizes that she has the part of the equation that Michael Caine never could solve.
He couldn't finish it because he didn't have the stuff, so he's just like, oh, we can't do it.
Right. So after that, the Tesseract starts imploding, and all of a sudden Cooper and TARDIS are ejected from that, and we find Cooper floating out in space by Saturn. And then we see him wake up. He's in a hospital bed, and he is on a space station that is orbiting Saturn. And this is obviously news to him because I wasn't there when he left. But he's been gone for probably close to 60 years. And I think he even said that he was 100 and what, 120 years old or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Murphy's still alive and she's coming to see him in about 2 weeks. And when she gets there, she's very old and she's dying.
And she's not bitter anymore, though, so that's good.
Well, you know, I think age puts a little perspective on things.
Well, it took her 80 years to calm down.
To chill out a little bit. Last, she tells him, you know, you shouldn't see your own child die. You should go and meet up with Dr. Brand. She's on Edmund's planet, and she's trying to start that colony. And so Cooper, with TARS, steal a ship. And he's off to meet up with Amelia Brand.
Just like Star Trek, the shuttlecrafts are super easy to take whenever you want. No security. Right.
Just steal a car. So that's the end of the movie. You almost want to see it go on a little more, but obviously it's almost 3 hours. That's quite enough.
Yeah, because Dave, the ending was sort of disappointing, I think.
Really felt that way. Well, Dave, tell me what you thought about Interstellar.
Because, like, it's a great movie. I really, really enjoyed it. Like, it's super emotional, especially the first time you watch it. If you got to see it in the movie theater back when it came out, that was an amazing experience seeing that. I think I saw it in IMAX. So it was just, like, amazing. Like, the scene where he's watching his kids grow up was just, you know, it kind of tugs at your heart a little bit. It's great, great scene. But, yeah, the ending just kind of weird. Like, can't they just all go through the wormhole with the space station? Like, I'm just like, why is he going off by himself? Aren't they kind of going that way anyway?
I don't know. It's that part of the story's not told.
It just kind of is like, what's going on? Like, why would he have to go off by himself? I don't know. It's just like, is he going to be Adam and Eve? Are they going to follow them up later? Or it's just kind of like, huh, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's really ambiguous. I guess Christopher Nolan likes ambiguity, especially with Inception, because that also ends very ambiguous.
Absolutely, right,
you never see if the top stops spinning, so you don't know if they're still in a dream or not. So it's like, ugh.
Right, exactly.
So
yeah.
I guess that's what you get when you get a Christopher Nolan film. You get ambiguity, unless it's Batman. Although there's a little bit of ambiguity in the Batman films too. So I guess that's just,
well, at the end, you don't know if Batman's still alive or not. You know, after the Bane thing,
yeah,
you're not entirely certain if Batman survives or not after that nuclear explosion. You're kind of left that maybe
Michael Caine sees him and Selena Kyle at the cafe. So, I mean, they're kind of alive or probably alive unless he's just hallucinating. But, like, yeah, he does ending things very ambiguous, which is kind of, like, annoying. But I guess I should kind of expect it because that's how he always does things.
Mm-hmm.
That's a signature. How about you?
What did you – oh, man, this is one of my favorite movies that come out for sci-fi in a long time. I love that this is grounded in science and that this is actually, you know, other than falling into the black hole, but I'm assuming that somehow that the Tesseract, interaction was, kind of an ex machina kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
To save him at the last minute.
Yeah.
But
they also said that no one knows what happens when you go into a black hole. Like, sorry. Like, they said no one really knows what happens at the edge of a black hole. They just said, like, no one has ever been able to come back from one. So, I mean, like, you know, because a lot of people, like, use black holes for wormholes in science fiction, like Star Trek does sometimes.
Well, so the idea is that, you would probably be crushed to death just by the weight of it. But,
oh, yeah, gravity.
But just the idea that he could go into it and come, and same thing with TARS, that TARS could have picked up that information from the singularity. So I love that. I love that this movie is nothing what you would expect from a sci-fi. I mean, there's, like, you know, no laser shootings and stuff like that. And there's no some, like, you know,
it's super grounded in reality, which I really appreciated. And you don't see time dilation used in movies very much. I mean, like Planet of the Apes, they use time dilation, which is kind of fun, but it's not used a lot, which I'm sure it's a powerful storytelling device for science fiction. I mean, they could do so much stuff with it. I think it's really interesting. I'm sad not more people do it, but that's one of the strengths of this movie for sure.
Right, right. No, it's cool because it's not anything you would have expected from a movie, especially a sci-fi movie. Most sci-fi movies, you're thinking you're going to get Guardians of the Galaxies or something similar to that.
Yeah.
And
space action.
Yeah, this takes a totally different turn.
Yeah, for sure. It's good. I really enjoyed it. It's for me, it was less impactful, but I was looking for more things. I think he like had something to do with the combines coming back in. But
yeah,
that's also not super well explained. Like, they don't show him doing anything in the bookcase that would make the combines come back. Although I'm pretty sure he is responsible for it in some way.
Yeah, but I think it was the gravitational shifts that were messing up their navigational equipment.
Oh, just the gravity in general. Just him looking around did it. Like, just him like moving back and forth through time did it. Like
They even mention, and he figures out that there's a gravity issue. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that's probably what was doing, because he was even saying if there was some kind of magnetic mineral deposit, we would have seen that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, it would have happened the first time, yeah.
Right. There's a lot of nuances on that. So that's the thing, too, is like there's a lot of things that you could kind of like pass over and not see or not hear or not pick up, and then the next time you watch it you could see it again. So that's kind of cool part of the thing about this movie. The other thing is just the idea that these you have a family and you have a dad, so obviously I I relate to it, and just the idea that he would go that far to try to save not just his kids, but, you know, all humanity. And he's going, you know, he tears apart his family because of it.
Yeah. Like his kids kind of grow apart, and his son stops messaging him eventually. And like, they kind of like resent him, and his kid's sick and they don't want to take him off the farm, or it's super bad and dusty. He's got like the worst asthma in the world. They're like, no, it's fine. He'll be fine.
It's fine. I lived through it. He can too. And that's and you know, it's kind of funny because we get kind of like two different kids. Like, one is kind of like a big rockhead, and the other one's obviously a super genius. She wants to help him, but, you know, obviously he's more wants to stay on the farm. So I don't know. So that's a cool, and just the idea that the interaction he has with them, even in the beginning, you see that he's trying to be a good dad, and he's trying to, you know, do his best to guide them. John Lithgow's character is awesome.
He's great. I love John Lithgow. He's so good.
Yeah. So
yeah, they did a lot of time setting up the family element in this movie. So it does kind of make it start off a little bit slow, but I thought it was engaging for sure.
I don't think the movie would have worked if you didn't have it. I know some people probably got kind of turned off, like, you know, like when are you going to start, you know, going into space? When is this going to become Interstellar kind of thing?
Yeah, because it almost seems like a misnomer for the first almost hour of the film. They're still on Earth pretty much, and then
right.
All the stuff starts, you know, hitting the fan when they do get to space. So I mean, it's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I would recommend people seeing it at least once. I'm not sure if it holds up super well to repeat viewings, because I was definitely less inspired the second time I watched it. And this is
really
like, you usually like with like movies and spoilers, like I usually don't care about spoilers, but this is one movie where like it really matters, I think, more than most movies.
Yeah.
Because it's maybe not so much a twist, but like knowing the ending like shapes the entire how the movie works.
Sure,
like,
absolutely.
All the things in the movie. So, yeah. This one, I would say, you know, I mean, you know, of course, we didn't give a spoiler warning up front, but I'm sure if you guys have listened to the show, you know, we always just jump right into spoilers. But I mean, like back in the day, I probably wouldn't have given this one away because it is so essential to the movie. But a movie like Star Wars, like spoiling that, like that just, I mean, it's not super essential to me. I mean, it's just like it's a good movie and you're gonna like it and keep watching it because it's the fun fantasy thing. And also, this movie is really long, so it's kind of hard to like want to watch over and over and over again because it is so long.
Sure. What part of you were saying that you didn't find it enjoyable after you watched it again? What took away from it?
I don't know. Like the movie hit me in the feels really good the first time I watched it. Like I cried in the movie theater whenever that thing happened, and it just didn't hit me as hard the second time around. Whereas like Star Trek, you know, the more I watch it, the more it starts hitting me in the feels. Whereas this one, like, I guess, I got all the emotional investment out of it the first time, I guess, and it just didn't strike me the same way the second time as it did the first time. And then, like, kind of knowing how it ends and knowing that he's the ghost, it kind of, like, was also, like, I mean, it was good because I was looking for more hints about the, you know, him doing other things in the house because I was trying to look for him. I didn't really find anything extra. It's pretty, you know, what you see is what you get, and then the film, I mean, there might be more.
Yeah, pulling down grandpa's pants.
Lots of corn, yeah.
Lots of corn.
But it was actually funny this morning. I was over at Kaylee's, and she opened the fridge twice, and twice the orange juice lid just came off on its own and flipped off onto the floor. And I'm like, oh no, is future me in the back of your refrigerator taking off the
orange juice? Give him orange juice.
Is that
Give
me?
Him orange juice. You're using Morse code.
Yeah, well, if the cap is flipped upward, so you see the top, that's a 1. If it's flipped on the bottom, it's a 0. So it's like, you know,
there you go.
A 0.
There you
go. So we only opened the refrigerator twice, so we didn't get anything, any actual words out of it. But I was probably trying to reach from the future to tell us something.
And something important,
and we didn't get the message.
Damn it! Well, I guess you can't.
It was just warn them all. It was just funny because, like, it literally flew off for no determinable reason twice.
That's hilarious.
And we just watched the Interstellar the night before, so I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I still, not just emotionally, it impacts me, but also I just think it's a really well done movie. Visually, it's a beautiful movie.
Lots of practical effects.
Practical effects are awesome. Acting's great. The science, it's all based on
real science.
There's a astrophysicist, theoretical physicist named Kip Thorne. He is kind of a consultant, and actually he was one of the guys that they reached out for him to be for this movie before it was even made. So I guess this was passed around, this kind of idea for the script, for some time, even before Christopher Nolan was on board.
That's interesting. And it was also interesting after we watched the film, Kaylee started just like looking up stuff and reading about how time as a dimension. And she found this interesting article about how this some people in science are trying to prove that, since there is, they've said there's no actual proof that time is a dimension. So they're trying to measure time differently. Without getting time dilation, so they used like a photon clock instead of an actual clock, and because the speed of light is constant, there was no time dilation whenever you moved a photon clock. But I'm like, that's I feel like their experiment was sort of trying to like just try to change how time dilation works, because I mean it seems to work with satellites and everything. I mean, I don't remember exactly everything in the article because she was kind of reading bits and parts to me, but it was interesting that people are trying to get past the concept that space, I mean, that time may not be a physical dimension, like the way we're describing it as like the fourth dimension. It might be something entirely different than a dimension.
Yeah, so we do, I mean, obviously, time does change. I don't know about a photon clock. I never heard of that, but I know that they use, what are they called, not radiation clocks, but basically a clock that's pretty exact. And so if you put either a satellite or a high flying plane, and then on the ground, the one on the ground will go faster than the one up in the air, kind of thing, because of but only by milliseconds.
But like, I think the article was saying that they're saying that gravity or lack of gravity has an effect on how time works when it comes to satellites. And that it's not actual time dilation; it's gravity that's affecting the clock. So that's interesting. I wonder if it'll pan out to be true, or if it's one of those things that someone's theorizing about and they can't really prove or one way or the other.
That's the thing. Scientists are always trained to find different ways to disprove old theories. So, and that's how you get progress.
Yeah.
So that could definitely be talk about progress. What's his name? Kip Thorne, the consultant for this. Was one of the people who built the LIGO detector to make the first discovery of gravitational waves that happened very recently.
Oh, that's impressive. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was the first time that it was obviously theorized that the gravitational waves would actually be a thing. But this was actually detected on Earth. And it was, I guess, a I think it's something crazy, like a 20-year-old project that they were developing over time, and they finally got enough funding to build the LIGO detector, and that they actually could detect these gravitational waves. And it was basically two black holes that were merging, and they slammed into each other.
Oh,
and
wow.
that's what they detected. So
that's got to be a rare event.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was that's a cool thing. Gravitational waves are bizarre stuff, and that's one of the things that you know, obviously, somebody's life work right there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
So, anyways,
she wasn't super huge on the movie, but I thought it was cool that she started looking up stuff about, you know, how time works and everything because of the movies, and we had a nice discussion afterwards. That was a lot of fun.
Well, that's the cool thing about a good movie is that later on, you're going to sit there and have some big discussions about, you know, about the movie, about the concepts, and that's when you know you've either seen a good TV show or a good movie, and that's why we do this podcast, and this is, you know, why Star Trek usually is one of the things that makes you talk afterward,
because it usually has a message, and it's fascinating,
or a deep thought that, you know, maybe you never considered before, or never, you know, never thought of. So that's a great, that's what I love about a good movie.
Oh, absolutely. You can just talk, you know, I remember being a teenager and going to see a movie, and like, even if it wasn't a great movie, we'd all stand out by our cars and just like talk for hours about the movie and like what, you know, what we thought of it. So it was a lot of fun.
I highly enjoyed this movie. I highly recommend people watch it. You should watch it a second time, maybe a third time. I've seen it multiple times, so I can't even say how many times I've seen it. Own it. So
that's awesome. I've only seen it the second time. I've only seen it twice altogether. I saw it in the IMAX, and I saw it just last night. And you know, it's a good movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. And if people want to watch it a bunch of times, I'm not saying it didn't hold up. It didn't have the same oomph it did. But, I mean, like, the acting, like you said, the acting, the special effects, I mean, all that stuff holds up. It just didn't impact me emotionally the same way it did the first time.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's an obvious thing, too, that you wouldn't get the same, because you already know what's happening. You know where the story's going.
Yeah, yeah, and this is one of the rare movies, or like I said earlier, like that, there were definitely spoilers matter a lot. Most movies, I don't think they do, but this one for sure, to me, would matter a whole lot. So sorry if you hadn't seen this movie yet.
But sorry, we spoiled it for
it's
you.
It's only 9 years. You've only had 9 years to check this out, so.
Well, not 9, 4 years.
I thought you said,
14.
Oh, 2014, no, so like four years, okay. Still,
four years.
4 years is fine. That's a lot of time to have seen something. Hopefully,
absolutely. So we got a extra letter.
Yeah, we did. We got a follow up over Tuscany, and so he is because
Tuscany,
Tuscany, our Tuscany rock episode. So because we mispronounced it so many times, Brad made the subject of the letter soon-cut-say.
I thought that's what we said. You said Tuscany.
Yeah, I know, but you started saying Tuscany too because I kept saying it wrong.
Oh, did I? I don't remember.
I influenced you. Brad says, "Synthaholics, great episode. Here's some thoughts. Tuvok and Fire do not mix. This is certainly not the last time on Voyager will end up burnt or blown up. He's the galaxy's most flammable Vulcan." Much agreed. Good thing the doctor's a good plastic surgeon. He can take away all his facial burns that he gets.
That's right.
That's me saying that.
That's funny.
So back to the letter. This is one of the few episodes where you see 709's Borg prosthetics beside her hands and her face and remember that she's not human and probably twice as strong as a normal person. I mean, if she's got some Borg bones and stuff inside of her, she might even be stronger than twice as much. I mean, that's my take on it.
Right.
He goes, "Yes, I've watched The Mighty Boosh." So, Holly, he watched The Mighty Boosh. That's awesome. He says, "It's easy to trash on Chakotay, but he's not a bad first officer. He never argued with Janeway in front of the crew. He always got a lot of things done, even though he didn't agree with it. And he never showed favoritism to the Maquis crewmen. Enforcing policies, you know, are unpopular as real leadership, and he never blamed the captain for those policies. Riker couldn't even get the Delta Shift roster assigned in chain of command, and it was his job. Every time I look at the night sky and see Orion's belt and picture him reaching across the sky, grabbing a nebula by the udders and milking the shit out of it. Thanks? Question mark.
Nice.
You made some great points about the nature of violence and entertainment that I hadn't really thought about. Inspiring. I knew I could get David to say good things about Voyager. He fell into my trap. Keep up the good work. As always, feel free to paraphrase or read anything I send. I'm looking forward to your Discovery Season 2 coverage. I hope there's a story that doesn't involve the Enterprise most of the season. So thanks again for another email, Brad. And as far as Voyager goes, you should go back to our Earthshaker Lightbringer episode where we talk about
relativity.
Yeah, we talk more about relativity in that episode, and I really like that episode. So you should listen to that one. I can't remember if we called it Blink of an Eye or if we called it Earthshaker Lightbringer Earthshaker, because I kept singing it. Earthshaker Lightbringer. Come get me, motherfucker. I don't know. I sang that a whole bunch in the song because that episode, because I thought it was funny, and so did Aaron.
It was good. Good episode.
Yeah, so apparently me and Aaron just don't know what the Mighty Boosh is, so thanks for making us feel left out.
Holly sent some clips that night. I watched it.
I watched the clips
and
it
was funny. I don't know what the movie is, so
yeah, I had to
look it up.
Old Greg. Yeah, so I learned who Old Greg was, and I learned how the funk came out of the tit ball. So that was interesting. I just think it was funny that like she referenced the tit ball, because I just never imagined that something like that would come out of Holly's mouth voluntarily.
Oh, you know, talking about the tit ball, it kind of reminds me of the movie The Naked Lunch. We should definitely do The Naked Lunch. It's sort of a sci-fi bent, but it's not totally.
Sci-fi boob ball, huh?
There's this how to describe it? There's this typewriter that he's a writer. And he's supposed to be William S. Burroughs, and he's typing, and this thing supposed to give this milk to make him more creative. there's these udders that he sucks on him. It's really bizarre. He squeezes it and puts it in his coffee cup and stuff like that.
That's anyways, really weird.
We should do that sometime, maybe after Discovery. But Naked Lunch is – oh, my God. You will lose your freaking mind, Dave.
Oh, sounds great. I like losing my mind. It's kind of fun.
And it's played by, what's his name, Weller, Admiral Marcus.
Oh, Peter Weller? Oh, that's hilarious.
He's the main character. I
can't wait to see him suck on some weird otter things. That's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We should watch that together. It'd be hilarious.
That would be hilarious. We should just get the recorder, just record us watching it. And like, that'd be great. Because we haven't done a commentary awesome. Episode in a long time.
In a zillion years, yeah.
Yeah, and I know it's great that I'm glad that you will look at Orion's belt and picture him reaching across grabbing nebula udders. I'm glad you're permanently scarred. So you're welcome.
I guess we'll do that too, people.
Yeah, we scar people. We change their lives. But then he said he was inspired about our points about violence, and so that was good. I've said other good things about Voyager. You just might not have caught up on those.
Voyager has its moments, and then it has just like really bad moments, and it's a very hot and cold. Like every once in a while, you're just like this has moments of brilliance, and you're like, oh, that's a beautiful episode, or that's a beautiful story or whatever. And then there's times like, what the fuck was that?
It's hot and cold, and everywhere in between.
Yeah,
Voyager is like the most diverse Star Trek show when it comes to like the quality of episodes, where it's just like it's like great. And then terrible, and then like every shade of color in between those. Whereas like usually with like Next Gen, the first couple seasons are really rough, and then it's really good mostly, you know, then on out. Whereas Voyager takes you on like this crazy roller coaster ride of like alternating between good, great, and terrible. And then as far as Discovery Season 2, he's saying he's hope it doesn't involve the Enterprise most of the season. I really would love to see the Enterprise a lot of the season. And I mean, with Pike in number one, I mean, they're casting these big people like Rebecca Romijn and stuff like that. So I really hope that it's a joint mission during the season too. I think that would be a lot of fun having a joint mission, because in Star Trek, we never really get fleet action. Ever.
Not often.
I mean, you get them like, you know, every now and then, well, they'll do something as a fleet, but mostly it's just like one ship doing its own thing. So I think it'd be really fun and different for Star Trek to have an entire season where they're working together with another ship. And that, I think that would be fun personally, because we've never seen Star Trek do that like on a long-term scale before.
Yeah, I think we're going to get them working in tandem. Obviously, Pike's taking control of the Discovery because of the spore drive, and I'm sure that the Enterprise will be doing its own thing, and they'll do jump back and forth, you know. So that's just what
I mean, it would make sense to have, like, number one take command of the Enterprise, have her check out the closer of the red spots in space, and then have Discovery jump to the faraway ones. That way they can cover more ground faster to help save whatever's going wrong with Spock or the galaxy or whatever the issue is. And then that way they can cover more ground, and then the show can jump back and forth between the Enterprise and Discovery, and then they'll meet back together. I mean, there's a lot of stuff they could possibly do. And if they built Enterprise sets, I'm sure they want to use them as much as possible. So
yeah.
I would like to see that personally. So I'm excited to see how that's going to all turn out.
Yeah. No, it's going to be great. It's going to be cool stuff.
It'll be next week on the podcast.
Woo-hoo. I know. It's hard to believe we've come that far so far.
I know.
Nutty.
It's going to be exciting. And
wacky thing.
And we're lining up guests. I think Jerrica is our first guest. We had her on a little over a year ago. Then I'm also talking with Natalie Schlittman. I was talking with Jen, our friend Philip, who's written nice comments on our Facebook channel. I mean, our Facebook wall for the show. So we've got some people lined up and some new voices, too. I think we might for the first time to be
very
on the show.
Very cool. Love it. Nice stuff.
Kaylee's friend Alex, who's a big Star Trek fan, he's been wanting to come on the show. So we're going to try to get him on also for Discovery episodes. There'll be lots of hopefully new voices and some old voices, and it'll be exciting. And then we want to do a season 2 recap with Trek Yards. So that'd be awesome. Maybe we'll get Stewart for a solo episode one day, too.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, they have some great insights.
Because it's really hard to get Samuel in a whole bunch since he's in England. But we definitely do want to try to coordinate that for the season 2 recap, because that was probably one of my favorite episodes that we did last year, the recap with Trek Yards.
Yeah. No, that was fun for sure. Absolutely loved it. Good stuff.
So that's our plans, and hopefully it'll all work out the way we're wanting to. So we hope you enjoyed this jaunt into non-Star Trek before we do 14 straight episodes of Discovery, because I do believe Discovery has jumped up to 14 episodes. That's exciting. That's like 3 months of Star Trek straight.
I know.
And new Star Trek. That's going to be so great. New Star Trek.
New stuff, and it looks exciting. Looks very exciting. I can't wait to see how they take this and what everything, you know, all these mysteries will start to unfold in front of us.
Yeah. God, I just hope it's good. Just please be good.
Yeah, I know,
it's
right?
Been such a long wait. So hopefully it'll be good. Because I think Discovery season 1 was almost off the air by this point.
Yeah.
It's been over a year since we've seen actual full-length episodes of Discovery. So stay tuned to next week, where we're going to be Star covering Discovery.
Cool stuff.
Well, all our music is provided by Warp 11, except the intro. That's by Dave Wilkes. You can follow the show online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. You can tweet at us at Syntholic Duo. I personally am at David_J_Duncan. Aaron is at Blackbird2004, and Holly's at Lunar Thistle. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/Syntholics. And check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Syntholics.
Yeah, subscribe there. And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us there. Give us some nice stars. Leave a comment. Helps people see the show more often. As well, if you can go to our Patreon.com/Syntholics. It's a great way to help the show $1 a month. That's not much to ask for the content that we are trying to give you, especially with this upcoming Discovery. We can get into the full breakdowns of each of these episodes. And then, as we always say, tell somebody, a friend that's looking for a good podcast to listen to, let them know about our show and what we're doing.
Yeah, I feel like utter jokes. I mean, we're the ones for you.
We're utterly hilarious. Taste that funk. Get the funk.
Michael Caine liked the funk.
Michael Caine, do not go gently into that good night.
Do not go gently into that good night.
Old age should burn and rave. Rage. So definitely let people know. It's good. It's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in a sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Yeah.
We did it. We did Interstellar. And we know what we're talking about. And we know what we're talking about for the next 14 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
Because they're not supposed to be any break.
Yeah. It's kind of weird that they're going to put a break. Maybe just because they filmed it all now. So.
Oh, I just hope. I hated the break. I thought that was stupid.
That was a weird thing to do, too.
It's not that many episodes. I mean, if it's like a 30-episode season or like 20-something like old Star Trek was, I can see, you know, maybe putting a break in between. But it was only 15 episodes. That's not very much at all.
Exactly.